And welcome to the Ramblecast. I am your host, Chris Cesarano, and joining me this week are Wesley.
Hello.
And Jerry.
Greetings.
Is this like the third week in a row I've had both of you guys on now that I think about it?
I wasn't here the last time. Maybe not. I don't know.
All right, well, either way, it doesn't matter. So this week, we have a little bit of an interesting topic. I forget exactly what it was that sparked it for me, but generally the idea is, what kind of 80s property, be it movie, film, book, whatever, would you reimagine as a video game and how? And what sort of sparked this for me was, or at least the first time I thought of something like this, was at some point, some years ago, I don't remember exactly how long ago when, I thought about remaking The Dark Crystal in the form of a sort of co-op Zelda-esque action game kind of a thing. General idea, well, have you guys seen The Dark Crystal?
Not in a very long time.
Yeah.
So I guess it helps to have a niece then, because naturally as soon as she was born, she's like 1 year old, it's like, hey, Angelina, let's watch The Dark Crystal. She rolls over and jewels on herself. We look at that as approval. But, yeah, I mean, I think it was probably around then when I was watching it that, you know, I mean, every once in a while you think, you know, I wonder if this could go for an update kind of a thing, and then you kind of feel ashamed for thinking that. But in regards to The Dark Crystal as a video game, my general thought was it just seems like it would fit most naturally to a sort of combination between Legend of Zelda and Secret of Mana kind of a thing, like still an action role-playing game adventure sort of thing. Only, I'm trying to remember all the things that I thought up in terms of reimagining, because I figured naturally, like, the male Gelfling guy is the protagonist of the story and eventually runs into the female Gelfling, which is, like, their combination of hobbit and elf. And for some reason, I thought it would be interesting if, instead of making the male Gelfling the fighter character, make him more of a wizard because of the background he has. Like, he comes from all the more sagely, oh, I don't remember what they're even called, the old sagely guys and everything. So it's like being scholarly, studying, you know, knowing magic seems like it would be more fitting for him. And then you have the female would be the one that's more focused on the melee combat and everything. And then, you know, you find out in the movie she's got wings and everything, so it's like, okay, make her, like, speed across, like, use those to speed across the battlefield kind of a thing. So, optional two-player kind of a setup. Instead of having them eventually get together, like, have it happen at the very beginning kind of a thing. And then, you know, just co-op role-playing game action kind of stuff. I didn't really want to get too in-depth with some of the stuff I thought of, but that's generally kind of how I envisioned that being done in video game form if you were, again, to remake that movie as a video game kind of a thing. So, with that as the start, you know, have you guys ever thought about, you know, what certain things, specifically in this case, specifically the 80s, because, you know, why not, how they might work as a video game kind of a thing? Or think of even how High Moon Studios made the Transformers games recently.
So,
well,
when I...
Oh, yeah, no, you go ahead, yeah.
So when I actually started thinking about this topic, I was sort of racking my brain for 80s movies. And you know what I landed on is something I'd love to see a video game on? Is Alien. And you know what? Like, and like, as I'm thinking about what kind of game is, like,
Hey,
the new one.
That's 70s. That is the 70s.
Whatever. Old movies. You guys are old. I don't know. But anyway,
there were video games in the 70s, too. Yeah.
So, like, the new Alien game sounds like exactly what I would want from an Alien game. And that is really exciting. Like, I was like, oh, man, you need, like... And this is how I sort of was growing up. It's like, there was, like, an early... 90s game or mid-90s game, like Alien versus Predator.
Yeah, the one by Rebellion. I think that was actually late 90s, like around 98, 99.
I'm really bad with dates. But anyway, like, I just remember that feeling. So, like, there was multiplayer, and one person could be the alien and one person could be the Marines or something like that. And I remember that fear of being the Marine and just, like, having a flashlight but being like, where's he coming from? Where's he coming from? Where's he coming from? And, like, those sort of feelings are definitely something that I would want from an Alien video game. And it sounds like, from everything I've heard, that the new Alien...
Isolation.
Isolation, yeah. It sounds perfect, and I'm excited.
And, of course, a lot of people are expecting it to be crap anyway, but I've got it pre-ordered. No, I think that franchise has had a lot of trouble making it to video game form. I think Aliens vs. Predator 2 for the PC by Monolith I really liked. But a lot of, for some reason, Aliens vs. Predator went back to Rebellion for AVP3. I guess maybe because Monolith is too busy working on the Fear games. And, yeah, Aliens, Colonial Marines, enough has been said about that game for the most part, but...
That is what it is.
It is what it is. Alien Isolation is looking to be like it could be an interesting little experiment. I'd love to see. I can't wait to see how it turns out, actually. Because as you guys know, as we discussed, I believe last time, I've actually got the game pre-ordered, so I'll be finding out. But that was, you never had like an older sibling to introduce you to all the wonderful 80s stuff, not even like an older sister to introduce you to Jem and the holograms or anything?
No, I was an only child as well, so I didn't.
Yeah, but you're my brother's age. That. You remember the 80s.
I do. I remember the 80s, and, well, I was born in 79, so I don't really remember the 70s, but I was exposed to a lot of it.
Well, parents, yes.
Yes.
So, another movie that came to mind was Mad Max. I think
that's getting a video game, actually.
Yeah, hold on. I think it's going to be different because, so when I picture Mad Max, I think of like an almost like Skyrim-esque open landscape that is not very heavy on action. Like, so a big sort of gameplay mechanic in stuff like The Last of Us or other survival games is like the limited ammunition. And like that's like a big feature of the Mad Max universe, right? Like, he has a shotgun that isn't even loaded. And so, like, I foresee something very desolate, like a huge Skyrim sort of map where you have almost no weapons. You're just sort of out there to survive, and resources are extremely scarce. And it becomes a lot more about, you know, interacting with other people and trying to help each other survive. And I think it could almost work as like a sort of an MMO thing, but then that's a whole nother ball of wax.
Yeah, when you start throwing... Like, I haven't played Rust or DayZ or anything, but considering how those are going, that could actually be a sort of possibility.
Yeah, and that sort of approaches, like, what I'm thinking about. But obviously a big part of any Mad Max game would be the driving sequences. Some sort of driving stuff, like cars, are such a big part of that. And so some way of making the person feel like they're in that very desolate... environment, I think, would be really interesting.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see, because, yeah, we do have a Mad Max game coming from the guys who did the Just Cause series, which could be bad, but could also be friggin' amazing. And
it could be very well. I've never played Just Cause, but my impression of it at this point would be somewhere between Far Cry 3 and Saints Row. Like, not as Saints Row, but...
Yeah, that's a good gap, I think. It falls in there somewhere.
But actually, Wesley, when you were talking about, like, you know, he has the empty shotgun, the unloaded shotgun, it actually made me think of... I know not a lot of people played it when it finally released, and it didn't live up to the initial hype, but I Am Alive is very scarce in regards to how much ammo you end up getting. So one of the things you can do is, even if your gun is not loaded, you can aim it towards other guys, you know, because, like, every once in a while there will be a sort of a conflict thing. And the amount of time, like, you spend just threatening these guys and not acting on it, like, eventually one of them will call you on your bluff. Which, you know, if it turns out the gun is loaded, then, you know, sucks to be them. I mean, granted, like, it ends up being a bit... It becomes formulaic after a while when you do these encounters, so you know generally how they're going to go, but... Like, that kind of thing actually came to my mind. Like, if you do have the budget to make a big open-world game like this and can do the AI well enough, then maybe you can have a dynamic enough group of foes that you can have something like that where you can use this, empty shotgun and, you know, get people to just calm down, stay back, or people will just be like, oh, mine's bigger than yours or something like that. I mean, I saw, like, the end of Mad Max once when I was on TV when I was a kid. Like, I just saw the guy get run over. So, I don't actually know much about the movies. I should probably rectify that.
You should. But
the first one actually just came out on U.S. Netflix today, I found out.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, like today. Yeah.
Well, there we go.
Yeah.
All right.
I got to check that out, too, because I'm like you. I haven't seen Mad Max in its entirety, but I absolutely want to.
So there we go with that. All right, and was there anything else you thought of, Wesley, or should we shift over to Jerry?
Let's shift to Jerry for a bit.
Okay, well, I had a couple of interesting ideas, and funny enough, yeah, they're based off of movies as well, and one kind of straddles the line between 70s and 80s, I guess, because it started in the late 70s, but the majority of it happened in the 80s, which is going to sound kind of funny, but I when I was a kid, I was a super, super huge fan of the Smokey and the Bandit movie franchise, mostly because it was like, you know, it was horribly cheesily written, but it was full of crazy car chases and all the crazy stuff that would happen to Buford Justice and all that other stuff. And I actually always thought that would make kind of an interesting, I mean, I guess you could say open world game. It wouldn't necessarily have to be an open world driving game, but a game with a big environment, which we're kind of getting this year in the form of The Crew. It's definitely not. The Crew is a game that takes itself very seriously. It doesn't follow that sort of goofy humor or anything like that, but it's a very big open world driving game where you can drive basically from one sort of shortened end of the United States to the other and everywhere in between. And there's a lot of cop chases and you're like trying to win like a race challenge kind of thing, which this was like. And I always thought it would be back in the day when I used to watch Smokey and the Bandit Part 1 in particular, and I would see all these crazy things, I would think to myself, oh man, it would be so amazing to be able to do some of these crazy chase sequences and all this other stuff in an actual video game. This was back when, you know, the most we got of a game like that was something like the original Test Drive or something like that, which obviously wasn't even remotely close to that.
Yeah.
But I think doing something like that would have been an interesting thing to have a larger open world driving game where you're sort of traversing the South trying to run sort of blocker for your friend who's got the truck full of illegal booze. Getting chased around and having sort of, you know, I could even see something like where you're over the radio or the CB radio with Buford Justice, having something almost like the, you know, the Monkey Island insult sword fighting kind of mechanic where you're just trying to have the dumb banter back and forth.
As imagined by Telltale Games, Smokey and the Bandit.
Oh, God, that would be crazy.
That would be interesting indeed.
That was one I thought would be interesting.
Huh.
I had that idea, and interestingly enough, when we were going back and forth in the email thread for setting up this show, Eric Hansen actually posted a thing in the thread talking about Die Hard, which is a series of movies that obviously has had a number of video games over the years, and they've all been pretty terrible. But when you think about it, I always thought that would be kind of an interesting thing as well. If it was done really, really well, like I could see something like having Because if you look at the original Die Hard in particular, you could almost see that being a turned into like an almost weird, almost like a Splinter Cell-esque stealth game in some cases. If you think about the original movie and sort of how he got around and how he how John McClane had to go and attack some of these guys and things like that, I thought that would be kind of an interesting thing to do instead of the. I actually never played the original Die Hard games, but as I understand it, they were pretty terrible generic action games.
Not surprising.
Yeah, I mean, there were movie license games in the NES era, which was, you know, those are legendary for what they were, which was pretty terrible.
Yeah, you could find an Angry Video Game Nerd episode of the first one, and evidently there is a Oh, I can't remember the name of it, because it's in Project Crosszone, actually. Sega, I think it was, made a arcade-like gun game that was licensed as Die Hard in America, but the character and stuff was changed in the Japanese version. Oh. And evidently he's got his own kind of series now. And it's funny, because you can kind of see a resemblance. It's funny, they made him look like an old Bruce Willis with a beer belly before Bruce Willis got like that. So
they predicted the future,
essentially. And it's funny too, because in Project Cross Zone, the Bruce Willis character, like everywhere he goes, like they make him a bit more bumbling in a sense. But it's great because like he'll come out and like there will be explosions and his clothes will tear off for no reason at all. It's like he's just sitting there like, this is my, it's just such a terrible day. Why is this happening? But
oh, man.
In that regard, no, because I was actually going to bring that up too, because the thing that made me interested in the idea of Die Hard as a possibility is I've always liked the idea of limited spaces in a game, like basically exploring a set location. Like Super Metroid and Metroid Prime, you have this one location that you have to kind of explore and retread through over and over again. The Resident Evil, the first one, you have to go through the mansion and everything. And it's amazing in some ways how much time you can get out of a game through that. And at the same time, usually the game's not going to be very long. So I think you could actually... There's also the element where you have something like, say, there's a lot of games doing it these days, but Japanese games specifically, but you have something like 9 hours, 9 persons, 9 doors, where the game's only a few hours long, but the intention is for you to replay it. So, you know, you can't get the real ending the first time through kind of a thing. Valkyrie Profile Covenant of the Plume is sort of like that, where the game is just really hard if you want to try and get the quote-unquote good ending. Otherwise, it's almost impossible because... I mean, I managed to do it the first time through, but the idea is that you're supposed to get the bad ending the first few times because you sacrifice your friends in order to be able to survive at all. But I feel like there's that idea where... in Way of the Samurai, which I played last year for the first time. Or was that this year? God, I can't even remember now. But that's the thing, you take something like Way of the Samurai, where, you know, it can be a very short game, but you're designed to play it differently each time. So I wonder if you could take something like Die Hard and just very carefully design Nakatomi Plaza, or Nakitomi,
I think it is, yeah.
I can't remember. But the plaza, like, just design that building very specifically and design it where, and especially in the article that I linked, you keep in mind that Bruce Willis never uses, like, doors as they're intended or elevator shafts as they're intended.
Exactly.
He's always using them differently. So basically, design the player's progress around abilities gained so that they can navigate the building in ways not intended kind of a thing. And make it very stealth-based. But the problem is, again, like with a lot of games, and it's been highlighted, is that, you know, if they're going to have a combat mechanic, you end up having to shoot hordes of guys because they end up going down... Like, combat ends up being really quick. So, I just think of the idea of a location-based game with a finite number of bad guys, but you gotta make them very, very threatening. Like, your character is always under-equipped, and if you're going to have to fight, you gotta be stealthy, you gotta be careful, and you gotta get, like, a sneak attack on them or something like that.
It's kind of like the sequences, the it's kind of like the sequences in the Batman Arkham games where you have sort of the, I forget what they're called, but they're like the encounter areas where you're inside a building and there's a bunch of enemies around. Yeah, the Predator areas where there's a lot of enemies around, and especially later in the game, a lot of them have guns and things like that. And if you dive in and are not careful about it, you'll pretty much get mowed down right away.
Yeah.
And a solution like that would be, yeah, if you were going to do a Die Hard game with a modern sensibility, yeah, you'd need something like that.
Yeah, you probably still, I mean, if you're going to go, no, I mean, I guess it depends. Like, maybe something along the lines of the Mr. Freeze fight in the second game, because there, one of the big things is, again, like, Die Hard, there's not a lot of bad guys. There's not even a dozen, I don't think. And versus, like, even in Batman Arkham Asylum, like, even in some of those areas, like, you're regularly fighting around 4 to 5 guys at a time on average, 6 or 7 in later parts. So there's a whole lot of mooks you take out in video games. Mm-hmm. And
this is true.
And again, like, if you're going to adapt something in the vein of Die Hard, but I think we should actually try that kind of thing more often. And we shouldn't be afraid of a game, like, even give it a little bit of, I don't know about procedural generation, but give it a sense that part, like, aspects of the building that you can go through will change. I actually thought about something like that, like, basically, I don't know, like, I remember one of my game ideas that I, because, you know, you come up with 8,000. One of the ones that I thought of, like, some years ago was the idea, like, you get abducted by aliens and you gotta escape the ship. And every time you played, different doors would be unlocked, different doors would be closed off and require a different sort of a key card, and where you got that key card was different. So the idea was, even if the game was only somewhere around 2 to 3 or 5 hours long, every time you played, you'd have to approach it differently. And a lot of times, though, people will look at a game like that and they'll be like, oh, maybe it's like $15, like maybe if it's a downloadable game. But if you're going at it with a AAA budget, imagine how much more polished and how more minute the details that will change could be. So I guess the question is, like, would people, like, if we could get people to be fine with a $60 game that's only about 3 to 6 hours long when you play it, but changes drastically every time you play. So it has that replay value where you might play it 3 or 4 times, totaling about 15 hours or so. Like, would get people so they're fine with that kind of a $60 investment. And I think, like, that kind of a thing, like, Die Hard as a universe is actually perfect for that kind of an idea.
I think that sounds amazing. Like, in my head, I'm picturing this, like, so this a AAA type of production, and it's a static map, but when you go in as John McClane, like, when the scenario starts, that's when the divergence happens. So the AI makes different choices. The enemies show up in different places, and stuff like that. Like, that sounds really fun. And it'd be great, like, in the, what I will say, the age of the internet, when you see games like all the roguelike games that are such a big deal right now, especially on PC, a lot of the cool factor is that they're all different. So every time I go in, it's different than the last time you went in or the last time I went in. And so there's a lot of stories to be told there outside of, you know, by players and not just the story that's told within the game.
But the thing there, though, is a lot of these roguelikes end up being small indie games, so they're not costing much more than $20 at the most.
That is true.
And I think, again, for an experience, like, people are going to expect, for some reason, like, even if it's, like, a fully 3D game and it's got a proper stealth, like, maybe Splinter Cell-ish, or, again, like, the Batman Predator mode stealth system that's fully realized, polished, you know, people are still going to be like, well, it's only a few hours long. I mean, well, or that's my cynicism, at least. That's one of the things that I really want video games to get more away from, is the idea that a game has to be so long for it to be worth the money.
Cause some just of put the, some multiplayer on it.
Yeah.
Call it a day.
Oh, God, I hate you. I hate you for that. I hate you this
or horde
much.
Horde mode, you know, everybody loves horde mode.
The horde mode, firefight, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, that I would have to be a plebeian here because I actually wouldn't mind any game at, like,
dude, that's true. I like
Jurassic the Hunted has a one-player horde mode, and I was just like, you guys, like, you made a really, really crappy single play. I mean, it was fun in a stupid way, but they made a really, really crappy, low-budget shoot dinosaurs game, and then they made a horde mode that doesn't have online play. Like, the game only released for, like, $30 or $40 when it was brand new, and it's like, dude, if that stupid horde mode had online play, that would make this really crappy, terrible, awful game worth the damn money. Because how many games can you just be with your friends just shooting dinosaurs as they come in, just over and over again?
It's true, especially then.
Speaking yeah. of, Denver the Last Dinosaur video game, how about that? Let's do that one. Oh, God, no, let's not man. Do that. Let's not revive that property. All right, God, I barely even remember that. What else was I thinking?
I have another one. Okay.
Mm.
So did you play Dear Esther? Did either of you play Dear Esther?
I did.
I have not, and partially because of Jerry didn't like it, honestly. Like, we don't always see eye to eye on games, but I think with something like Dear Esther.
Okay.
I don't think
I wasn't a fan, but I did play it, yes.
Let's start at Dear Esther, right?
Okay.
That's where this starts. So this is a game where the player doesn't have a whole lot of control. They are in the game and they do some actions, but they aren't the primary mover of events. And it's a game based on the movie Das Boot. So this is a World War II German submarine movie. And like, there's been things like Silent Hunter, like there have been submarine games. But the reason I think that you should take control away from the player in a lot of scenarios in a game like this is that one of the reasons I like the movie is that when they get into like a battle, like when they make a run on a ship and then they're trying to dodge all the depth charges, it's that feeling that they have no control over what happens. Like, they are sitting there in a tin can underneath the water and there's explosions all around them, and you know what, there's absolutely nothing they can do about it. And so that's why
That's cool, actually.
If you could get a player to feel that, like, because in a lot of games you're given so much control, right? Like, if you're put in that situation, you are expected to save the day. But in some situations like this one, there's nothing that you can do that will make it better. Like, you just have to hope that things turn out okay. And so I think that...
Like, you're controlling the sub and you're able to do stuff, but you'll reach that point where the only thing you can do is get down as low as you can and wait for the depth charges to pass and hope you don't blow up, and it makes you sit through that.
Yep.
See, it's funny, because there's an aspect of this to Steel Diver. I didn't get to play the new one they put out that's trying to be free-to-play, I think. Maybe it was just free for a temporary time period. I don't remember. But they did come out with a new Steel Diver, but that was the 3DS game I got at launch, God help me. and the most interesting part about it, and the reason I actually got it was because I played this part at PAX East, was the periscope missions, which were a little bit similar, because you had to try and aim for these ships, and then there was, of course, a sort of depth... It was kind of rock, paper, scissors in its mechanics, but... There was a depth charge minigame where you had to, you know, try and choose the right depth to be at and hope the depth charges didn't hit you. Like, they either passed you or they blew up above you. And there can be that kind of an interest. Like, it's interesting how Nintendo got partway there, but decided they wanted to also make a side-scrolling, weird mission segment where that's the majority of the game. And the Steel Diver is just not really good.
So, if you wanted to be really interesting and bold, what I would do is, I wouldn't actually make the person control the submarine. I would make them, like, the second in command of the submarine. So you have a person who, you have the commander who is asking you for advice, you know, good old dialogue trees, and you get to, you know, try to convince him to do things or try not to, but then when you get into the actual battle, like, you have your station on the submarine. So, you know, maybe you are firing the torpedoes, maybe you're manning the sonar, and your entire job isn't to save the submarine, it is just to fulfill your little purpose while you're shaking and bouncing around and bolts are coming off the walls and everything because of the explosions. So that is the extreme way to go about it.
So you want an experience that is completely focused on giving the player as little agency over the entire situation as possible. Just giving them control of this little box and making them go, God, oh God, oh God, I don't know what's going to happen, but as long as I get my job done right.
Yes, and then maybe you have a multiplayer element where you're each manning your stations, like that Starship game that I've always wanted to play and I've never got to. Yeah,
I was just thinking of that actually.
Yep.
Make a version of Artemis, only instead of the star, like the Enterprise, make it a submarine.
Mm-hmm.
I think you could kind of sort of do the whole. I don't think it was to the degree that you're looking for, but one of the Silent Hunter games, I think it might have been Silent Hunter 4, you were able to do something like that, I think, where you could have multiple players who were in charge of different stations on the sub.
Interesting.
Something like that. I don't think it was more to just make large-scale battles easier. I don't think it was it wouldn't have resulted in the kind of thing that you're describing, but yeah, that does sound pretty amazing.
As long as they have the secret level where you end up running into Emerald Weapon, I'll be fine.
There you go.
Or Godzilla, for a much less obscure reference, I think.
Much less.
But, alright, that's actually interesting. I'm actually liking some of your ideas in particular, because they end up going somewhere very different. I feel very cliche with my reimagining of Dark Crystal now. Actually, what's a real big shame is I've actually been I've been watching, an anime my brother lent me called Macross Frontier, which is sort of a sequel series to the original Macross, which was localized in America as Robotech. And, you know, the closest we ever got to that in America was the Robotech Battlecry and Robotech Invasion games. And they're both, you know, all right for the most part. I think Invasion actually turned out to be a bit better than Battlecry, because Invasion was based off of a later series that played a bit more like a shooter. I mean, it basically was. It was a first-person shooter. And it actually had, you guys know in Metroid Prime 3 how you would lock onto the enemy and then aim within that general lock-on area to shoot at specific body parts?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Robotech Invasion did that on the original Xbox, and I believe it was also PS2 and GameCube, and I think part of it was because you're just regular human-sized, and the enemy mechs are, like, huge, and they move quick. Like, they take these big hulking steps, so in a matter of seconds, they're way outside of your vision range, so you were able to lock on, but then they forced you to still aim within that general area. And you could aim for, like, they had, like, guns on their shoulders that you could shoot for, or they had their weak point that was, like, the eyeball area that you could shoot for. So I thought that was actually really cool at the time, and it was really interesting that Metroid Prime 3 did a very similar thing, but it hasn't really caught on since then. I think there's actually some interesting possibility and opportunity there where you're trying to get the player to focus in on not just aiming for the head kind of a thing, but basically you take away some of the concern that they have to aim for and make them focus much more like a scalpel, I guess, where you're trying to specifically aim at this specific body part as this thing's moving around and shifting and everything. That was, again, the Invasion, which is based off of the original anime. It was called Mos Pieta, which is very different. But no, like, I would just love a game based off of Macross or the first series from Robotech, which is the planes that can transform into, like, three different modes. And I just want that game, damn it. I want to play a jet fighter that can become a robot or half jet, half robot. A jet bot. Like,
wasn't there some space combat game that I played at one point where you were, like, transforming between, like, a space fighter and some sort
Strike
of...
Strike Suit?
Maybe? Strike Suit Zero?
Strike Suit Zero, I think, did that. That sounds familiar.
Yeah, there's a couple of people trying to do stuff like that. I had a friend telling me about Strike Suit Zero. I might check it out, but that's the thing. Like, this is specifically wanting to do it in the Macross universe,
yes,
though, because there's so many other mechs in there that it's like, I want to see what it's like. In Robotech Battlecry, again, like, it was all right, but basically, the only mode that really controlled in a way that was worth a damn was was called the Battleoid, which is, like, the big robot form, because the jet was, like, super fast, so as soon as you transform to the jet, like, you're flying around like, I don't know what I'm doing, like the first Warhawk demo for PS3. Like, just out of control everywhere. And then the in-between mode, which visually is my favorite mode of the machine, is like, it's a jet with arms and legs, basically, but it looks cool. Something about it looks cool. But it controlled like shit. Like, you were super slow. It was trying to combine the two forms of flight, and it just did not work. So it was basically like this game where I can transform into three different forms of machine. Like, I just stuck to one. Like, I would love something that's kind of like if Project Silphied met Transformers. Just that kind of wonderful fusion. But
that would be interesting.
Yeah, well, as far as I'm aware, it probably won't happen because, you know, America versus Japan.
Because America.
Because America. We don't like robots that transform. No, I'm trying to think now because I was very poorly prepared because I was focusing on beating Tactics Ogre Let Us Cling Together today. And as soon as I beat it, I came back to my computer, I sat down, and I was like, by the way, podcast tonight. I'm like, oh shit, I did say that we were going to do that tonight, didn't we?
I think we all had
that same thing happen.
I was a little amazed at like how many 80s properties have video games, and like how many movies and properties and stuff where I'd be like, oh, I would make a video game like this, and I end up describing a game that's come out in the last 15 years. And it's like, dang it.
Well, now I know that exists, so that's good.
Yeah.
I have my, I've had some pretty serious examples. What I want, though, is realistic physics, an over-the-top video game, competitive arm wrestling where it really matters. You know, I want ungodly complex control schemes on the controller, like controlling your weight and stuff, or your breathing with a button or something. Like, I want an arm wrestling sim.
I need it. I know there was a game in Japan once. They actually had to recall it because it, like, broke some people's arms that Atlas put out, that was actually, like, one of those crazy games you see in Japanese arcades where it was an arm wrestling game and it actually had, like, you know, a robotic arm that you had to put your – I don't know what the name of it was, but you actually arm wrestled with this machine. And I remember it got temporarily recalled because, like, two people had their arms broken by it or something.
Like, I don't want farm sim. I don't want goat sim. I want arm wrestling sim.
Why?
Because it would be so cool.
Make it have the people that did Surgery Simulator or whatever.
Yeah.
That way, you know, you are breaking people's arms as you do it. You're watching their bodies fly through the wall.
I just found it. I just found an article from 2007 talking about the recall. It was a game called Arm Spirit.
That sounds extremely because, of course.
That's wonderful. It's got a microphone, so the louder you scream, the more of a bonus you get to the wrestling part.
Yeah, Arm Spirit, courtesy of Atlas. Oh, that's hilarious.
Oh my God, Atlas, I love you.
Yeah,
I love the different things they come up with arcade games too. It's like arcades aren't dead over there; they're just opportunities for weird peripherals.
Yeah, pretty much.
That totally broke my train of thought. I'll tell you what.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. I wasn't really thinking of much more anyway. The funny thing is I just recently saw I was hoping this would actually help kickstart it, because last time I went home, I finally got to see the film Lady Hawk, which is kind of funny because I thought it was about a warrior woman, and it's completely not. But unfortunately, that didn't really give me much to think about other than during the final segments, I'm just sitting here like, oh, this is reminding me of an Assassin's Creed game. Or it would have if people were climbing all over the place.
So, do you think part of the reason that it feels like so many current video games are derived from some of these 80s movies is because so many game designers right now grew up in the 80s?
They were either kids or they were teenagers in the 80s. Well, a lot of them were, at least.
And, I mean, a lot of designers of any type of media, right, draw from a lot of the past media that they were exposed to at a certain time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that's always going to happen, and I think one of the things that I've observed a lot is a lot of times you have a lot of, it's like Aliens, for example, like you have a lot of developers that, you know, they might be good programmers, they might be good designers in a pragmatic and practical sense, but they don't always know the best thing to do when it comes to theme, narrative, and all that other stuff. So yeah, it's harder to get a Aliens game that is anything more than the superficial elements of it, rather than the more deeper elements, which is why Alien Isolation looks interesting, but, I mean, you're playing as Ellen Ripley's daughter, so who the hell knows what kind of a story it's going to have. So.
That is true.
You have that kind of thing going on. Versus, oh god, if only we could have a good Predator game, because Predator Concrete Jungle was not very good. Which is funny, because, I mean, you already have part of a good Predator game in, you know, Aliens vs. Predator. You just take that and make it an entire game.
And we've got, you know, take the Batman Detective Vision mode and tweak it, and you've kind of got a similar idea
A similar idea, yeah.
Yeah.
So there's so many different options. You can go the Batman route for a Predator game. You can go the first-person shooter route for a Predator game. The only thing... you could probably even do a tower defense game as a Predator. I don't know how, but you would.
Roguelike, Metroidvania, it's all that matters.
Oh my god, no. No. I just realized, a tower defense game for aliens in general. I mean, just think of the turret sequence.
Yeah.
That actually would kind of make sense, and I'm surprised Sega hasn't already tried to capitalize on it. But
a free-to-play tower defense game.
With aliens. I mean...
With aliens.
There you go.
And hell, Fox is run by dumb businessmen. They'll sign off on it. This is probably like that Candy Crush game. We'll do it.
Yeah.
Get us those numbers.
Coming to mobile this fall.
Have Miley Cyrus voice a character. It'll sell millions. And I've completely derailed myself again. I was originally thinking of a property of some sort, damn it.
It's not my fault this time.
It's not your fault this time. What I was going to say is actually, because I recently also beat Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon, and it was funny because I didn't think of it until well after, but I was actually discussing with my brother and my dad this weekend why I feel like the Expendables movies are, you know, they're all right, but even as this big, you know, we're going to be like the revival of all those great action movies, yeah, they're kind of playing it too straight. And when they're,
I think they try too hard, honestly.
Well, where they try too hard is usually the comedy, and that's horrible. Like, the execution of it is terrible. It's like, oh, you had Chuck Norris tell a Chuck Norris joke. You have Arnold Schwarzenegger saying he'll be back. Yeah. Yeah, that's
I remember that. Right
there. It's like, that's expert writing. Versus, it's executed a lot better in Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon because, I mean, I was basically sold on that. Like, I was worried, actually, because I didn't really like Far Cry 3 over much. I mean, it was all right, but I wasn't really much of a fan. But I was sold on Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon in the very beginning when the first thing you do is grab a minigun on a helicopter and then Long Tall Sally is playing in the background as a direct homage to Predator. But it didn't have to be anything more than that little wink and a nudge. Like, if you never saw Predator, or if you didn't, like, know about it well enough, then the thing would have gone completely over your head, but it's still like, look at me, I'm shooting at people. Like, so it's still good. And then just the idea where it's like, yeah, we're gonna give you, you know, the freaking montage. Like, it's like, we already know, hey, 80s had montages. Let's make, you know, we can be funny. But they actually had legitimate freaking jokes in the goddamn montage. So it's Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon. What I really liked about that was the guys knew how to be funny. They knew how to put in a joke. And granted, they had the occasional terrible one. Like, you know, collecting items and hearing, I hope I don't have to get any fucking flags. Like, just, ugh, that's on the level of the Chuck Norris joke, but that's...
And the thing is, and to be honest, I think that's kind of the thing. Like, we've been sitting here talking about old, you know, 70s or 80s properties we'd like to see redone as video games, and I think, to be honest, I think it's less about that and just wanting to see, like, that, I think that's what I'd rather see is more stuff like Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon that's a... an homage to that stuff and to that idea, but is not based on any of those things. Like, I don't know if a game based on Die Hard these days is really something anybody needs. I mean, Mad Max is getting a new game because it's getting a new movie too, but yeah, but I don't know if we need necessarily a new, like, a new, you know, a game based on Smokey and the Bandit or a game based on Die Hard, which has appeal and definitely would have a large audience interested in it, but is an audience of older players. You know, a lot of younger people now who are getting consoles and stuff don't necessarily have a connection to that. But stuff like Far Cry Blood Dragon that is able to take all the cheese and craziness that we loved about the 80s, but take all that and turn it into something original, I think is kind of better in a lot of ways, because you get that nostalgic hit, but it's also something completely unique in its own way.
Yeah, I mean, I'm somewhere, for the most part, I don't believe in remaking a film or anything, like a property in any way, shape, or form, just for the sake of remaking it. Unless there's, you know, like, let's face it, like, Aliens was good because they actually did something with that universe and that continuity. I really like the original Highlander movie, but it did not age well, so I would not mind seeing that film remade by someone that would do it right, someone that's not going to try and Michael Bay it up, someone that would, you know, likes the original, but is willing to acknowledge its flaws and try and, you know, improve upon the original. And then you have, like, again, like, the first thing that I brought up was a sort of reimagining of The Dark Crystal, which there's a little bit of a mixture there, because while on one hand, in my mind, it has room to be improved upon, at the same time, because Jim Henson is such a specific thing and such a specific style, and in my reimagining, it would very much depart from that style and nature, it would feel as well as some kind of a bastardization. So even if objectively it would be a good reimagining or recreation, it would in some ways also be just stepping all over someone else's vision and creation. So I think there is definitely, it is on the whole better to say, to look at some, to start with, okay, if I wanted to do this as a video game, how would I go about it? But use that as the jumping off point. Actually, again, like, back when I was in college and I thought I was going to get into game development, or rather dreamed of it, there was a number of games that I thought of as remakes or reimaginings, one of them being Vector Man, actually. And then I decided, hold on a second, why don't I try and transform this into something that's completely new and different? And it's interesting how you can use something as a jumping off point, and then when you decide to make it something that's your own, you can actually put all this more personal spin to it. A lot of these ideas ended up turning into sort of like having a lot of my thoughts on things like Cyborg Theory and other things like that involved in the story, like very in depth kind of a thing. So with the right kind of creative mind, you know, you can take an idea and then here you have a great game design launched from it, or perhaps you even have a good story launched from it, depending on who is behind it kind of a thing. And yeah, in regards to that Die Hard experience, I would love to see someone use that as a jumping off point for a game, but not necessarily make it a Die Hard game. I mean, let's face it, we don't necessarily need to be John McClane, and we don't need to be limited by a film that specifically was made to be a film, versus being a video game.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is the reason a lot of old movie tie-in games were crap is because they existed just because they were like, well, these games are hot right now, we can do something about that, and it was never...
It was merchandising.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. It was the equivalent of making a toy or, yeah, you know, t-shirts or something else. There was no real creative consideration of how can we make this best fit the game, the movie that we're trying to make, and how can we make it best tie into that. And to a certain degree, that's still the case today. There have definitely been exceptions. There have been some really good movie tie-in games. You know, from what I've heard of that Mad Max game, looks like they're trying to make something that is going to... They're going to make a game that is tied into Mad Max, but that could fully stand on its own as well.
But then the real question is, are they just going to make Just Cause in a Mad Max skin? Which I know like some people would love, and then other people would not.
And I probably, even as someone who loved the Just Cause games, like some of that craziness could certainly transfer into a Mad Max game, and it could certainly even fit that universe, but I wouldn't just want them to take Just Cause and change the models. I'd want it to be its own thing that you could definitely say was different in many ways.
The additional point I wanted to say, which is there are also, of course, you can find good examples of people like bringing in their inspirations. I guarantee you BioShock has more than enough, but for me specifically, I can see it very obviously in Halo and Destiny, in that they're both very much inspired by old, like, 70s and 80s sci-fi novels and stuff. 60s and 70s, probably, actually. Like, you can especially see it in Destiny's art style, where so much of it looks like it's ripped from the cover of some old, like, used bookstore from something like Dune, like the old paperback novels kind of a thing. Then Halo is very much inspired by, you know, Ian Court, what is it, the Culture series? I don't remember. Ian M. Banks book series, as well as Starship Troopers and Larry Niven's Ringworld saga. So you have all these different sci-fi inspirations coming together into something that has its own style, look, and feel to it. And Destiny looks like it's going to be a bit of the same way. So there's, you know, that kind of, like, again, like, looking at it for inspiration, but whereas Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon is very much a self-aware love letter, Destiny and Halo are trying to take it somewhere further. Like, this is the stuff that we loved. Now we're trying to, like, use that to build our own individual thing that speaks for, like, that speaks to us and of us, kind of a thing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I think that's really the really the thing that we're taking out of this is, yeah, we can, I think it's good. We can sort of draw on a lot of older action movies and stuff. Yeah. As concepts to maybe base newer stuff on that we can be like, yeah, you know, to be able to do something like this would be cool. But I think, yeah, tying them necessarily to the old properties that we remember is probably not explicitly necessary in order to get what we want out of them.
Except Robotech. I need a Robotech game.
Except for Over the Top, just so we're clear.
Over the Top, yes.
I need Sylvester Stallone in this arm wrestling simulator.
Yeah, okay, well, fair enough, yeah.
All right.
I have to admit, I would play a AAA... you know, version. I would play a AAA shooter title based on the, you know, the more recent Rambo movie with that level of insane gore in it. I'd probably play that game. I don't know if a lot of other people would, but I probably would, or if it would, the game would be allowed to exist. But
I feel like part of me already did playing Turok, and I mean the new one, which wasn't
maybe.
Turok wasn't bad, but it was definitely not. I don't know. It's in that weird... It's like, well, I mean, I remember it, so that's a thing. I mean, I barely remember Golden Axe Beast Rider, and the whole reason I remember that is because it was terrible. So, I mean, at least I remember Turok, but... All right, I think it's about time for us to wrap up then. So, Wesley, where can people find you on the internet?
They can find me at my podcast of World War One, which is historyofthegreatwar.com, and on Twitter at Wesley Livesay. That's Livesay.
Just put in Wesley Livesay.
Yes, Wesley Livesay. Pronounce it incorrectly.
Pronounce it incorrectly.
I apologize. Up until right now, that's what I thought it was.
That's okay. Everybody does.
But now I know. Now that I've heard it, I will remember that.
Write it in American, damn it. All right, and speaking of not from America, Jerry, where can people find you?
True indeed. So I've been, my YouTube channel is youtube.com/pxabstraction, and I talk about everything I do there and a bunch of other stuff at geekbravado.com. I haven't had a chance to do a lot of videos this month, but I've written several blog entries, actually, which are up there. And I've been kind of dabbling my toe in reviews a little bit. I try to approach I do reviews of stuff where I can sort of take a different sort of slant to talking about a particular game or whatnot that's different than the sort of standard formula of a lot of reviews. And I've been trying it mostly as an exercise, and it's been kind of interesting. I talked about the Destiny beta, I talked about Murdered Soul Suspect, and I'm hoping to do that some more. I do have some more stuff planned for my YouTube channel pretty soon, including hopefully some more co-op stuff that's gonna go up in the next couple of weeks. And I've actually spent most of this month streaming on Twitch, soon Hitbox, just to finally putting a big dent in my pile, since it seems, you know, 2/3 of all games are getting delayed to 2015 now, so it's giving me a lot of time to do that.
Yep. All right. Yeah. And as for me, I finally got the new Ramble Pack up, finally. It's on The Walking Dead. It discusses themes of parenting and methods of parenting, I guess you could say, within season one of The Walking Dead. I worked hard on it, and even though it's got a couple of mistakes, I think it turned out well. So go to youtube.com/user/RamblePack64, and you will find that as the most recent video uploaded. And, of course, I have articles on Gamertag with Gamertag.net. I don't know if I'll have anything more on Tactics Ogre, Let Us Cling Together, by the time this goes up. But I do have my own write-up of Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon, where I go more in-depth into my comparison with The Expendables, and even with why I enjoyed it so much versus why I did not really care for Far Cry 3. And you can always find some of my articles on GamersWithJobs.com as well. And, of course, you know, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/RamblePack64, patreon.com/RamblePack64 if you want to toss me a buck or two a month to help out with, I guess, lunch. I do plan on going through that page and making some edits as well to it. I decided I'm going to make a Patreon goal to be to continue my JRP Diary series. And, of course, you know, just more stuff is going to be coming around. So just check those links out, give feedback, give comments. Maybe next time we'll have just a whole segment on reading comments and everything, because there's been a couple in the Gamers with Jobs Gamer Podcast thread. So until then, next time, hopefully, me and Wesley verbally duke it out over Halo.
Cannot wait for that.
Come on, champ. Got any words? Huh?
I don't need to say any words.
You're going to have to, otherwise it'll be a shitty podcast.
I'm just going to come in here and say, the ending.
God, jeez.
And then I'm going to walk away, and then it's over.
Cry me a river, baby. Cry me a river. All right. Thanks for listening, guys. I can't remember who I had the music for last week. I think this week I'll finally put Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon music up there. So, all right, have a good one, guys.
Take care.